Martha Beck says she grew up wanting to be an ecologist or a professor. However, after bearing three children while acquiring three Harvard degrees, she says, I decided I'd rather just lie down for a few decades. Well, during that time, she became a nationally known life coach who helps people create their right life through workshops, coaching, a website, and more. She has authored several best-selling books and writes a monthly column for O, the Oprah magazine. And although most of her coaching clients have been women, she recently started offering an all-men's coaching weekend called Escape from the Man Cage. We are very privileged to have her join us now by phone from California. Martha Beck, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad I get to be in the warmth here.
Yeah. Well, you make us feel warmer, too, by telling us about... I won't even ask you what the temperature is out there where you are, but why don't you just start out by telling us a little bit about what is it that you help people do?
Well, a lot of people, you know, once upon a time, people went to their minister for help, or, and then in the 20th century, it became a therapist that you went to for help if you just felt stuck or didn't know what to do next with your life. But psychology and therapy were made for people who have actual mental illnesses. And most people nowadays who want guidance don't actually have mental illnesses. So life coaching, as I see it, arose as a response to people who want help, guidance, wisdom, support, but actually are not mentally ill.
Well, that hopefully covers most of us.
I hope so.
As I mentioned, it's our understanding that for the most part, your clients tend to be women. And why do you think that's the case?
It's funny. Most of the clients who come to group things are women. When I was doing one-on-one coaching, most of my clients were men. And I think it's because it's considered kind of a touchy-feely thing and not maybe as masculine as most guys would like to be perceived. So they don't want people to know that they're seeing someone. That keeps them out of groups, but when they can have confidentiality, you'd be surprised how many men want coaching.
But when you had them one-on-one, did they respond to the kind of coaching you did?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very. I mean, I developed my tools while I was getting all those Harvard degrees, and then I went out and tested them in every possible life situation. So it works across gender. It works across culture, age barriers. It's really kind of a universal skill.
So you developed this course for men. Now, is it restricted to men?
Yes, actually, this is a group that's restricted to men because what I call the man cage is this image of masculinity that keeps men from showing up at group life coaching seminars. It's this, you know, I have to be strong, I have to be tough, I have to give my life to support my loved ones, and nobody's ever going to see me sweat, and it's a burden. So I finally just said, look, I'm a woman, but I'm going to try to get some men out of that cage, and we had a great time.
And so you have done some of these. You're not just starting or planning this, but you had some success doing it.
Yeah, we've had some great times.
So how does it work?
Well, that particular workshop, what happens is I try to take guys, this is the man cage is an offshoot of 19th century factory labor. If you look at the way all workplaces are structured, it has its roots in the way factories operated. So you have to show up and be in this place that's kind of joyless and do these repetitive tasks. And I don't think anyone evolved, and especially men didn't evolve to do that. They're designed to be outside. We're all designed to be outside, using all five senses, enjoying the day. Psychologists have now shown that that's the optimal place for satisfaction and learning for a human brain, and men don't have that. In the 80s, when I was doing my doctoral research, it was women who were more restricted, but now men are much more trapped. Women have many more degrees of freedom than men do.
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by that. How does it differ what a woman's role in life is now compared to what a man's role is?
Women don't have any strictures on variety. Like if I tell a woman your soul-killing job is destroying your life and your family, you need to quit it, she'll go home and tell her husband. They're like, oh, we have to do something. If I tell a man your soul-destroying job is ruining your life and everyone else is around you, go quit your job, he has to go home and have a huge argument with his wife and with his in-laws and with his children and with his brother. And I mean, men just don't quit doing things that make them unhappy. They have to be tough. And women are actually allowed more socially, and I know this because I am a woman, we have more degrees of freedom to be to try different experiments with our lives.
You take more risks, too? Is that involved there? I mean, because isn't that what causes men often not to dare to change a job, for example, is what if I can't replace it?
Absolutely. And the thing is that men, good men, which most men are, they don't feel captive in their jobs for their own sakes. They feel captive when they've got dependents. So it's your wife and children, you know, the people who depend on you that you have to serve every day by getting up and putting on that tie you don't like and going off to a job you hate. So it's very well-intentioned, but I think it's destroying a lot of men's souls. And the very wives they're trying to support actually love them and want them to be free.
I don't suppose it's necessary always to tell a man if he's got a difficult life situation to quit his job.
No.
You must have techniques to work around and help him adjust and be able to live normally.
That was just an example. But men really are identified by their profession, so it's hard to find a sense of identity if they don't have a job. And then this weird paradox is happening where most jobs are things people don't like to do, and even the things they don't like to do are going away. There's such economic upheaval right now, and it's not going to change in the future. And industries are falling, and the typical jobs of the 20th century are going away. And men feel really trapped in how do I provide for my dependents without a job, and how can I be happy if I'm in a job? That's the whole man cage thing. So we try to make them happy in their jobs, if at all possible, and then find another way to make a living if they just can't deal with the job.
So how do you make them happy in their job?
Well, there's something that we call the three B's, which is you either bag it, you barter it, or you better it. You know, like you could make your job happier by taking a hot water bottle to work and putting it on your feet while you're commuting. I mean, little things like that where you can tweak a lot of life situations to create happiness. Sometimes it's just a minor adjustment. And then we get more drastic as we go along because we want to disrupt it as little as possible.
And when you're with your man cage workshop, have you had some transformations or some kinds? Can you give us some examples of individuals without naming names, of course, that
sure
where they've made some life changes that have worked?
Yeah, absolutely. We had one man who was trying to keep his family business going, and it really wasn't a viable business anymore, but he was doing it out of loyalty to his parents. And so he was able to take a really, you know, hard, cold look at that situation and go tell his folks, look, times have changed. I need to drop the business and do something else. So it was like a huge albatross away from his neck, finally. And then we've had other people, you know, there was a guy who just, he thought his wife was sort of driving him to be a certain kind of person. And what we changed with him is just the way he communicates with people so that he could go home, talk to his wife about his real feelings, and experience this enormous relief as he, like, shared himself in a way that he hadn't before because he thought it wasn't masculine.
And in the case of the family business, the first example, did the family business go away?
Yeah, the guy actually went and bought a farm, which is what he'd always wanted to do.
Great, I'm sure that that resonates with me.
Yeah, I had one guy who was a doctor who didn't like being in his doctor's office, and we decided that he would just be the traveling Botox man. He bought himself a plane and flew around the country, and when he needed money, he would go to beauty salons and offer Botox for, like, under the normal rate. And he had this wild, adventurous life, and he took his son with him, and they've had an amazing 5 years since that.
Well, you know, another thing that I think you probably got many opportunities to have clients, because we hear about so much research that shows the happiest people in the world are not in the United States. You know, I mean, you hear this Scandinavian countries, Australia, Mexico, other places, not the U.S.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, we are the culture that was built on hard work and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. And that remains in place psychologically, even though when you get like to the end of your life, you start to realize that what really mattered was emotional connection. And this is part of it. The man cage exists across cultures, but it is very, very strong in the United States. And people are always trying to, they're pushing themselves hard to try to create things like a beautiful house or a beautiful car that actually don't bring lasting happiness. And they're selling the time, the one thing they can't get back that could make their life worthwhile if they just spent it doing something they loved, somewhere they loved, with people they love.
Well, and so you of course take a one-on-one approach, or that's one option you have, is you take a one-on-one approach to help one person at a time. But you also do things that reach more than one person, right? I mean, through your
right.
writings and things like that. Because don't we need institutional or attitudinal changes on a broad scale?
Yeah, we really, really do. And so I've been trying to sort of get the word out. And when I do seminars, for example, what we tell the guys is, go set other guys free, you know?
Yeah.
And we do things like having them interact with herds of horses in ways that where they have to be very highly attuned to their senses and to one another in order to create, you know, to herd an entire herd of wild horses. We try to drop them back into those primal experiences, and this joy arises. And then they start having all these creative ideas and thinking of new ways to live their lives. We're just trying to stimulate that and then get it into the population.
How does that happen with, I mean, I saw that on your website. That was very interesting about using animals like horses and a relation, putting a person into a relationship with a horse or a herd of horses. How does
right.
that work? I don't understand how that works.
Well, you start to realize that we have a very mechanized way of behaving. And again, that factory thing. There are certain ways that things happen in society. You go in, you punch the clock, you do whatever. If you're with animals, they don't have any of those rules. Instead, they exist in continuous creative response to whatever is present. So you can go in there, you know, and try to be strong and brave, but if you're not authentically feeling it, a horse will actually sense that it's not real and will run from you or become anxious. And actually, the animals react to you the way humans would if they weren't stuck inside social norms. So as you interact with the horse, you get very clear feedback about how you're coming across. And if you're tense in your life, you'll be tense with the horse. And it's only when you relax that the horse will respond. And then you have a very, very powerful memory of what it felt like to drop the tension and then see an immediate result.
This seems almost kind of like what you hear nowadays described as mindfulness or mindful living or living in the now or something like that. Is that kind of what happens to people when because we know animals do. That's the way they
absolutely.
Live.
Absolutely. And, any helping technology, any modality that takes people to a place of happiness will go to the same ideas of mindfulness, presence. It doesn't matter whether it comes from Buddhism or from just pragmatic experience. Those are the things that make us happy. So eventually, everything we do that makes us happy is going to take us there.
That reminds me of another thought that I was going to ask you about, was all the research that goes on now about brain chemistry or whatever, an analysis of what part of the brain is involved when you're happy. And do you utilize any of that? I mean, is that any of that information helpful to you?
Absolutely. I'm like an obsessive reader of neuroscience. And now that we know that the brain can actually be changed by experience, and they've actually shown the mechanism by which that works, one of the things we do immediately is to try to, for example, scramble the learning of the brain in its typical state so that the brain becomes now open to innovative thoughts and experiences. We do it very specifically and very explicitly. I actually had my brain mapped so that I could learn the feeling of the brain changing in my head and figure out what did it. And then I teach that to clients.
Wow. That's very cool.
It is. I have to say, it's fun.
Let's see. What else was I going to ask you about? You also have a background in ecology, and it seems like a very diverse issue that you also deal with, completely separate from your life coaching, you know, dealing with rescuing wilderness ecosystems and indigenous peoples and so on. Can you tell us a little bit about that work?
Yeah, actually, just the fact that it seems divided from our culture, like here's psychology and then there's this whole thing with nature. Those two things are inextricably connected. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, you know, going back to that factory machine idea of the of a human being, we've gone into that model of having to be robots, and we've disconnected ourselves from what I call our true nature, our sort of evolved way to be happy in the world, and we've cut ourselves off from the nature around us. And it's only by healing those connections within ourselves and then with other beings, with other species, with landscapes, that makes us whole. We've fractured everything in the world with our massive obsession with productivity and wealth. And we've thrown away our happiness, and we've been destroying our environment. And when you start to heal yourself, what you find is that you have a natural compulsion to help other people, and then animals, and then everything.
Well, I think those ideas are ideas that would resonate well up in our country, because we do pay a lot of attention to natural things up here, more than the average. You may be
yeah.
aware that we have the Canoe Area Wilderness up in here, and mm-hmm. and so it's a beautiful part of the country, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. But on the other hand, what would you say, as a life coach for our listeners here now, who are living in bone-chilling cold of the polar vortex while you're there in sunny California? What
yeah.
can you pass along to us to help us deal?
Well, one of the quickest ways you can change your mood is simply by changing the self-talk in your mind. And it's been really funny this year, because we've had these beautiful blue skies and balmy temperatures, but everyone's panicking because it's the worst drought in the history of California.
Oh,
so
yeah.
we look at these snowstorms, you're getting 18 inches of snow, oh my gosh, we need that water. And you're looking at us and going, 70 degrees, oh my gosh, we need that sunlight. So it just helps me to remember, you know, when I'm worried about the drought, you know, at least it's not bone-chilling cold.
That's right.
And those sort of, oh, well,
and,
you know.
Yeah, and we look out and say, well, at least we don't have to worry about the water.
Exactly.
We've got
at
this
least
big
we're not...
lake out here.
Exactly.
All right, that's good advice. We have been talking with nationally known life coach Martha Beck, who has instituted a new program seeking to get men into her life coaching more in a more relaxed session called Escape from the Man Cage. And Martha, I wonder, is there, as we wind up here, is there anything else you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about that would be something you'd like to pass along to the listeners?
Absolutely. You know, you don't need a life coach. What you need is to pay attention to what brings you joy and what does not. And if you just take the tiniest little choices, just choose... Every day, choose one thing that makes you joyful instead of something that you were doing because you had to. And you can bring yourself to life that way. You have an internal compass. You can read it by yourself. It manifests as good feelings or bad feelings. It's that simple. And yet people keep giving me money to tell them that.
Yeah. Well, that's
okay.
Great. That's beautiful advice. Thank you very much. We are real privilege to have the chance to talk to you, Martha, and good luck with your man cage release program.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for joining us.